Light leaves the sun and 8 minutes later gets to your body, which absorbs a part of it. The rest bounces off in all directions, and some of it reaches the eye, passing through the lens and forming an inverted picture of you on the screen and the back of my eyeball. This picture sets up chemical changes in a light-sensitive substance, and these changes disturb the cells, which are tiny living creatures of which the screen is built. They pass on their agitation to other very elongated cells, and these in turn to cells in a certain region of my brain. It is only when this terminus is reached and these molecules and atoms and particles of these brain cells are affected that I see you or you see me. And the same is true of the other senses. I neither see, nor hear, nor smell, nor taste, nor feel anything at all until the processes, after the most drastic changes and delays, arrive at this center. It is only at this terminus, this moment and place of all arrivals, at the grand central station of my here and now, that the whole traffic system, what I call my universe, springs into existence. All disheartening on having no head. Now, this excerpt always reminds me of the nature of reality. That is to say, the fact that we are alive as energetic beings, while also being aware that we are a collection of microscopic things. An animated movie playing out in front of us every second of every day. Viewed and interacted with by us. Now, I'm not trying to cause an existential crisis here. I'm trying to do the opposite. This simple realization to me has the power to remind oneself that aside from all of the dramas that attempt to get our attention, there is always a place, this simple baseline of reality. The baseline of reality that exists in the great expanse. But what if that collection of physical processes could be fully understood? Stephen Wolfram is a computer scientist, physicist, and businessman. In 1987, he started Wolfram Research. Over the past few years, he has begun the Wolfram Physics Project to find the fundamental theory of physics. To answer the question, how does our universe work?
Okay, hello everyone. Well, thanks for joining me here today. We are going to be talking about getting to the fundamental theory of physics. Now, I never expected this. If you'd asked me even last fall, I would have said that I have an idea, but I don't know if it's going to work. And I'm really excited to say that it's working. I think we've come a long way. We're not actually at the end. We're not there yet. And I'm sort of hoping that all of us together can really finish this job.
The establishing idea is based on the observation that a complex system can emerge from a simple underlying rule. To illustrate this, Wolfram uses something called cellular automata.
So wait, what are cellular automata?
Fair enough. So typical case of a cellular automaton, it's an array of cells. It's just a line of discrete cells. Each cell is either black or white. And in a series of steps that you can represent as lines going down a page, you're updating the color of each cell according to a rule that depends on the color of the cell above it and to its left and right. So it's really simple. So a thing might be, you know, if the cell and its right neighbor are not the same, and or the cell on the left is black or something, then make it black on the next step. And if not, make it white. Typical rule. That rule, I'm not sure I said it exactly right, but a rule very much like what I just said, has the feature that if you started off from just one black cell at the top, it makes this extremely complicated pattern. So some rules, you get a very simple pattern. Some rules, the rule is simple, you start them off from a sort of simple seed, you just get this very simple pattern. But other rules, and this was the big surprise when I started actually just doing the simple computer experiments to find out what happens, is that they produce very complicated patterns of behavior. So for example, this rule 30 rule has the feature you started from just one black cell at the top, makes this very random pattern. If you look like at the center column of cells, you get a series of values, you know, it goes black, white, black, black, whatever it is. That sequence seems for all practical purposes random.
So the idea when relating back to simulating reality is that perhaps the complexity that happens every minute of every second around us can be reduced to a simple underlying process, as we see in the emergence of randomization in Rule 30. So could that same idea be carried into a VR simulation? A simulation that, when double-clicked, could generate a new reality that operates to the same level of detail that our physical reality does.
What I thought was going to happen is I thought we had a pretty good, I had a pretty good idea for what the structure of this sort of theory that's sort of underneath space and time and so on might be like. And I thought, gosh, you know, in my lifetime, so to speak, we might be able to figure out what happens in the first 10 to the minus 100 seconds of the universe. Mm-hmm. And that would be cool, but it's pretty far away from anything that we can see today, and it will be hard to test whether that's right, and so on and so on and so on. To my huge surprise, although it should have been obvious, and it's embarrassing that it wasn't obvious to me, but to my huge surprise, we managed to get unbelievably much further than that. It's like general relativity, it's a very nice, mathematically elegant theory. Why is it true? You know, quantum mechanics, why is it true? What we realized is that from this, that these theories are generic to a huge class of systems that have these particular, very unstructured underlying rules. And that's the thing that is sort of remarkable. And that's the thing to me that's just, it's really beautiful. I mean, it's, and the thing that's even more beautiful is that it turns out that, you know, people have been struggling for a long time, you know, how does general relativity, theory of gravity, relate to quantum mechanics? They seem to have all kinds of incompatibilities. It turns out what we realized is at some level, they are the same theory.
This opens up a level of exploration that we as a species are only scratching the surface of. It was only a few decades ago that we had to rely on pen, paper, and calculators to theorize the complex problems. Now we can rely on computer language and processing power, which brings us to something that Wolfram coins computational irreducibility.
If you think about things that happen as being computations, you think about the some process in physics, something that you compute in mathematics, whatever else, it's a computation in the sense it has definite rules. You follow those rules, you follow them many steps, and you get some result. So then the issue is, if you look at all these different kinds of computations that can happen, whether they're computations that are happening in the natural world, whether they're happening in our brains, whether they're happening in our mathematics, whatever else, the big question is, how do these computations compare? Are there dumb computations and smart computations, or are they somehow all equivalent? And the thing that I kind of was sort of surprised to realize from a bunch of experiments that I did in the early 90s, and now we have tons more evidence for it, this thing I call the principle of computational equivalence, which basically says when one of these computations, one of these processes that follows rules, doesn't seem like it's doing something obviously simple, then it has reached the sort of equivalent level of computational sophistication of everything. So what does that mean? That means that, you know, you might say, gosh, I'm studying this little tiny, you know, tiny program on my computer. I'm studying this little thing in nature, but I have my brain, and my brain is surely much smarter than that thing. I'm going to be able to systematically outrun the computation that it does because I have a more sophisticated computation that I can do. But what the principle of computational equivalence says is that doesn't work. Our brains are doing computations that are exactly equivalent to the kinds of computations that are being done in all these other sorts of systems. And so what consequences does that have? Well, it means that we can't systematically outrun these systems. These systems are computationally irreducible in the sense that there's no sort of shortcut that we can make that jumps to the answer.
Now, in a general case.
Right, right. So what has happened, you know, what science has become used to doing is using the little sort of pockets of computational reducibility, which, by the way, are an inevitable consequence of computational irreducibility, that there have to be these pockets scattered around of computational reducibility, to be able to find those particular cases where you can jump ahead. I mean, one thing, sort of a little bit of a parable type thing that I think is fun to tell. You know, if you look at ancient Babylon, they were trying to predict three kinds of things. They tried to predict, you know, where the planets would be, what the weather would be like, and who would win or lose a certain battle. And they had no idea which of these things would be more predictable than the other.
That's funny.
The cynical side of myself keeps asking the question, why? You know, why simulate reality? Why create another reality? My mind immediately goes to three avenues: research, prediction, and art. In the field of research, such a simulation could open up a virtual playground that could allow researchers to run experiments that play out in the same way a physical world experiment would, opening up avenues for viral treatment or simply understanding biological processes to a deeper fundamental level. As an example, predicting weather patterns down to the minute and second. Say, with more realistic simulations, the world of games and storytelling would be endless. A standardized set of rules that, if chosen by developers, could create complex medieval or sci-fi worlds that are built on the fundamental theory that basically operates everything around us in this world. Take this voxel game as an example. Here we have a piece of software where tiny objects, which we can think of as atoms, make up the world, all governed by rules like gravity and wind. If we increase the resolution on this, we would have something that looks more like reality, with the voxels now at a microscopic level. Now, obviously the generation of a world as complex as this would take a huge amount of processing power, of computer power, so we may need something like a quantum computer to bring it to the next level. This video by Jabrils explores this concept.
This map is in what's called superposition. Now, superposition is something that happens in quantum mechanics, which just basically means that this map currently exists as every possible map imaginable.
So here, we have a game that is made up of atoms, generated by complex rules based on the laws of our known universe. This field is at an extremely early stage. Wolfram himself notes that they are making discoveries on a weekly basis that throw wrenches into their preconceived notions. It's a field that's waiting for young minds to discover. While watching one of Wolfram's interviews, I came across this comment. My argument is that if we can harness enough computing power to create a universal simulation that simulates our own universe, we would end up having an infinite loop or recursive creation of simulations. If we can create a simulation that resembles our own, then there would be beings within it that would create their own simulations, and so on and so forth, resulting in an infinite loop. Now, I don't have a problem with this because it is exactly what would happen if we were to simulate our own universe. My argument is computational power and memory. If a simulation would create an infinite loop of the simulation creation, then that would require an infinite amount of computational power and an infinite amount of memory. Each simulated universe could potentially have an infinite amount of simulations run, so it would be infinity to the power of infinity of computational power. Imagine a tree, where a branch had an infinite amount of branches, and those branches had an infinite amount of branches, and those branches had an infinite amount of branches, and those branches had an infinite amount of...